Welcome back to the podcast. Coming up today, the Blazer EV is back on sale. We'll talk about the Rivian R2 early sales and how's Kia doing with their EV sales. Plus, stick around because later on in the show, I'll tell you what Tesla are saying about where Rivian chose to put their charge port on their new vehicles. Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you're listening in the world. It's EV News Daily, your trusted source of EV information every day. It's Monday, 11th of March. I'm Martin Lee, and I go through every EV story so you don't have to. We go live at 5 p.m. UK. That's midday Eastern. Patreon supporters get the episodes as soon as they're ready and ad-free. You can be like them by clicking on a link in the show notes. We'll start with news of the Chevrolet Blazer going back on sale. Chevy's resumed sales of the 2024 Blazer EV, having addressed previous software issues with big updates. Now, price reductions also come in as well, with prices ranging from $5,600 to $6,500 reductions across different trim levels to attract buyers after a halt in sales because of the software issues. The initial stop sale order came late last year after they reported 482 units sold, and there were problems because of charging and some other system faults as well. Now, they initiated a big testing program with 16,000 miles driven across various conditions every single day, or at least simulated, maybe this is even in the real world as well, to identify and resolve what the software glitches were. Now, GM's Vice President of Product Software and Services highlighted the extensive testing they've done and all the virtualized software validation that they can do on computers now as well to make sure that it's all done properly. This person has a background in tech and worked at Apple, Amazon, and others as well. And I love to see the traditional OEMs hiring people like this, because it kind of admits, hey, we haven't got the right skill set internally, and so we're willing to go outside, as well as, you know, GM has a certain pride in wanting to promote from within as well. And so that's understandable, but they did mess up and now they fixed it. And it's always good to see them hiring, hopefully, the right people for the right job. This person's come in an external hire to GM, which is, you know, it's not rare, but they do tend to promote from within. And so these software-related problems, I think, had an expert over the top of them. And he says that it was a very rare but a very disruptive issue with the software, leading GM to issue this eventual stop sale order. The testing process involved 40 Blazer EVs driving every day, all the different charging networks, real-world testing, GM confirming the issues were exclusive to the Blazer and not indicative of broader problems with its Ultium-based vehicles. Now, what are those discounts that I mentioned of the Blazer EV, and why is this important? Well, the Blazer EV LT all-wheel drive is now $50,195. The RS variant is available for $54,595. With the all-wheel drive, and if you want that RS in rear-wheel drive, it's a little more expensive. The vehicle qualifies for a $7,500 federal tax credit. Despite the price cut, the Blazer EV is slightly more expensive than if you look at the Honda Prologue, its platform counterpart. Now, the Prologue does start at $48,795. Chevrolet plans to introduce an LT front-wheel drive version priced under $50,000 and is yet to announce prices for the higher-performance SS model. And I think there's an additional RS front-wheel drive coming at some point, TBC. The software update not only fixes previous issues but adds new features, ambient lighting and selectable colours and digital gauge cluster updates. So hopefully this is the last of it and this is what needed to be done. But yeah, the software issues, I first read about them on Inside EVs where they had a test vehicle. And, you know, press cars should be bulletproof if you're giving a Churo car or one of their readers. But I think it was a supplied vehicle and it just bricked itself charging. And it sounds like they might have known about this already, but didn't understand the severity of it, which of course led to an incredibly negative review. That one review got picked up by loads of media. And naturally, it's a bloody nose, but it's a really important vehicle, this. Yes, it's still expensive. Yes, it's still Model Y territory, being, you know, late 40s and 50,000s. But they have to get this Ultium technology out there and on the road and start selling in decent numbers, because the only EVs that GM sold last year were the Bolt and they canned it. So, yeah, they sold some others, but it was their rounding errors. So can't wait to see more of these Ultium vehicles on the road. Look, plenty of GM EVs in China. I mean, it's different. That's unfair of me to say. It's different technology, and I think it's a different form factor and chemistry of the cells as well. But look, either way, Let's get them out in the US, and that is a great thing. So, hey, maybe you got one of these cars coming your way. I'd love to know your experiences. Now, I got some cleanup to do with Rivian, some tidy up, I should say. And after all of the news last week of the R2 and the R3 and the R3X, their new vehicles, a lot of news coming out over the weekend and things being said and some data coming out as well. The first thing, though, we saw was some initial footage of the R2 and the R3 models driving away from the unveil event, or just kind of driving around the block, really, to get loaded onto car carriers, even though they haven't got to go too far back to the Rivian headquarters. But they were shown on Rivian on Reddit, followed by some additional videos shared on the Rivian forums, including the R3X, a good look of that being loaded onto the car trailer. Well, there's an initial video of the R3X, followed by the R2, offering a close-up that confirms its resemblance to the R1 sort of family design, if you like, but in a smaller form factor. The R2 is slightly taller than there's a Hyundai Tucson in shot and a Kia Soul as well, placing it firmly in the midsize SUV category. It does roll nice and slowly past this person taking a video. We can also see Rivian's designer and some staff members as well just taking their own shots on their own phones. It's so cool to see these vehicles out and about. Another clip provides a comprehensive look at the R3 as it drives by, capturing the attention and the delight of onlookers as well. And the R3 definitely looks like, when you compare it to the vehicles around it, much more of a certainly a compact, and I'm sticking by Volkswagen Golf, even though it's a slightly different length, being the best comparison of that. I'll pop a link to Reddit in the show notes. Well, we heard from RJ Scaringe over the weekend that the Rivian R2 has over 68,000 reservations in less than a day after its reveal. Now, it's not the most onerous of financial obligations. It's only $100 deposit, and it's fully refundable as per Rivian's policy. The money goes into a separately held account as well, so you know your money is safe, and they're going to use it to develop the business, for instance. And that's, you know, a more affordable approach than when Model 3 was first launched, for instance, which was, you know, 8 years ago, and a much larger deposit was needed for that. The number of pre-orders has varied in terms of depending on the coverage that you read. Some people saying, oh, I thought it would have been more, and some people saying that's very substantial. Personally, my opinion, I think it's a very strong number after 24 hours. And it also shows the amount of people who are interested, excited about this vehicle. How many of them will convert into customers, we don't know, because it depends on when the vehicle arrives, in what specs, etc., and final pricing as well. Rivian has scheduled the start of R2 production for the first half of 2026, adjusting its timeline forward from the end of 2026 amidst a temporary halt in development of their $5 billion Georgian manufacturing plant. I think they saved something like $2.25 billion in immediate capital expenditure. So tightening their belts down there and investing in their normal Illinois facility. I'm sure that they'll try and, you know, get as many incentives as they can to make sure that that Georgia facility happens. It was going to create thousands of jobs. But for now, as I said on the Batteries Included podcast that I do on a Friday morning with Kyle and Tom and Dom, the most important thing with Rivian is that we don't get carried away with the R3 and the R3X, which I think took some of the attention. I was a bit frustrated, but I know why they did it, and I wouldn't have done anything differently. But the most important vehicle in Rivian's world is the R2. It will, if it goes well and they can make a profit from it and it puts the company in the black, it is the vehicle that was Tesla's Model 3. And they absolutely, the R2 should be getting all of the attention that we can give it. And I can't wait for it to arrive. Talking of when it will arrive, something I picked up from my friend Tom Melogny from the State of Charge YouTube channel when I was talking to him on Friday. He's a Rivian owner, and he got an email saying that he will get expedited delivery. He'll be first in line if he wants to order the new R2. Now, emails went out to customers on Friday and saying that as you're an existing owner, I think this went to R1S owners, but maybe R1T owners as well. Hey, if you know, leave me a comment and let me know. For now, I think just R1S owners to say, hey, you're a part of the Rivian family already, and if you would like to order the R2 to get yours and be front of the queue, then we will prioritize you. I don't see why that wouldn't apply to R1T owners as well. Now, to qualify for the priority delivery of the R2, R1S owners must reserve the vehicle using the same email associated with their R1S purchase, and you must be residing in the US or Canada. Maybe that applies to you. I think it's a great way to reward existing loyal customers. I'm sure nobody new to the brand will mind anybody skipping ahead of them if they've supported Rivian in the very, very early days. Let's hope they can get through to provide customers with the R2 and indeed the R3 and further vehicles as well. Now let's get into one of the contentious subjects over the weekend, and it really, I don't think, should have been, but I'll tell you what people were saying and why it kind of blew up online a little bit as well. And that was where Rivian chose to put their charge port. Now, these vehicles coming out when they will in 2026 will come with a native J3400 connector, formerly known as NACS, formerly known as the Tesla connector. Now it's a standard and everybody will get to use it, from car makers to charging makers. And so it'll come with that. It's a much better connector. If you don't know the history of that, it's much more elegant. It's kind of been built on by the standards body as well. It'll do AC, it'll do bidirectionality, it's the future, and it's the only plug that North America needs. Now, we have CCS2 over here, and I don't see J3400 coming here, but, I mean, weirder things have happened. However, lots of people over the weekend said, you've put it on the wrong side, and that includes a great publication. Inside EVs had the headline, why the Rivian R2 and R3 had the charge door on the wrong side. Now, they might have put the word wrong in inverted commas, but I still felt, oof, that's a bit of I don't know, an insult, possibly? It's not on the wrong side, it's where Rivian wanted to put it for many, many good reasons. Lots of the hardcore Tesla fans. I mean, that's not all Tesla fans, it's not even the, you know, it's the tiny minority of active social media people who sort of live and breathe the brand and would die on that hill for Elon Musk. Really quite, you know, insulting, saying that RJ is boneheaded for putting it where it is and that he hadn't thought it through. Did they not think about putting it in the same place as Tesla? Well, again, it's kind of insulting because a group of very intelligent people decided to make all of those design decisions, and that was clearly one of them. Now, Jeff Hammond, the design lead for Rivian's R1, R2, and R3 programs, said the rationale, well, there's many good reasons. Firstly, placing the charge door on the passenger side. Now, we're right-hand drive here in the UK, but for most left-hand drive markets, this is going to be a worldwide vehicle, and a European vehicle, and we don't have the wide open spaces that the US has. Many parts of Europe, not just here in the UK, lots of history, very condensed cities, and we do a lot of on-street parking, whether that is overnight or, you know, whatever. So not trailing cables around the vehicle is a good idea. And so that in where the vehicle will be sold was part of the influence. The curbside recharging, the placement aligns with the strategy of minimizing the cable length and inside the vehicle, because those vehicles are going to be the single motor design that minimizes the length of the cabling inside the vehicle, and that minimizes cost, and that means you can get your $45,000 starting price. In terms of practicality, there's no difference in terms of DC fast charging, because by the time these vehicles are on the market, I mean, any DC fast charger with the new J3400 plug is going to have a reasonably long cable. Even Tesla's V4 dispensers, very long cables for any four corners of the vehicle. The charge port location, if these vehicles were on the road right now, would necessitate double parking at Tesla supercharger stations. But they're not going to be on the road for 2 years. And also, that's not really Rivian's problem. The Tesla supercharging network is brilliant and big, but it's not the only charging network, and we don't all have to do the same thing. But anyway, RJ Scaringe gave a 15-minute interview to the Electric website and said the same thing, that it was cost. It minimizes the high voltage cabling inside the vehicle, and for every dollar they shave off, then they can bring that cost down. They are laser focused. I get the feeling that if, you know, Elon Musk had said, oh, we're laser focused on cost reductions, and all those Tesla fans would have gone, oh yes, very good, oh yes, very, very good, put the charge port wherever you want to, Mr. Musk. But it wasn't just the Tesla hardcore faithful. One of the Tesla engineers, that's kind of not doing him enough justice, the Cybertruck's lead engineer, Wes Morrill, took to social media to suggest that Rivian should redesign their vehicles. Oh, and by the way, I'm loving this new Tesla, where Elon Musk is now off doing his thing with Twitter and politics and, you know, hanging out with the people that he wants to, and leaving the Tesla engineers to have that freedom, because, you know, you don't go back too far. And the only people that were allowed to comment was, a group of one, and that was him. And now we see more from their investor relations, from their designers. We see more interviews given and just more openness. And it's wonderful, because we all, you know, we always knew that Tesla had a great strength in depth. And now we're hearing from those people. And now Wes Morrill took to Twitter to suggest that Rivian should consider relocating their R2 and R3 charge ports to fit in with Tesla's supercharging network, even though the V4 dispensers will have cables long enough to come to any of the four corners. For now, the V3s, which is the only ones open to the other companies that can use, like, you know, Ford, etc., that have now got access to J3400 connectors on superchargers, they are taking up more than one space. But that is essentially the recommendation from Tesla. The recommendation on Tesla's website says park over the line, take two spaces. This is something that is essentially, and I'm happy to be shot down in flames on this one, and I don't mind, this is essentially a problem of Tesla's creating. If they didn't want anybody to block two spaces, they didn't need to open their supercharger network up. If they wanted to have other cars on their supercharger network, they didn't need to have such short cables on their V2 and V3, or V3 dispensers. And so this is not a Rivian problem. This is a Tesla problem. But I don't think of it as a problem. It's more of a challenge that will be overcome with the V4s. And why do we all have to follow one company anyway? Let companies do what is best for them. Rivian will do what's best for them. Tesla will do what's best for them. And we'll all just get along as adults. And so it was a weird debate to see online. And even, like I say, the motoring press themselves kind of following along with that narrative of it's in the wrong place. No, it's in exactly the right place, because that's where Rivian chose to put it. And before we finish our little tidy up of Rivian stuff, yeah, huge congratulations to Electric to get that 15 minutes with RJ Scaringe. Obviously, he's, you know, was doing the likes of Marcus Brownlee, MKBHD and stuff. He's got 20 million subscribers, but great to see the CEO talking to the EV press as well. And some really, really interesting things that came out of this interview with Seth from Electric. Firstly, that the R1S and the R1T, the existing vehicles will do bi-directional charging. It's not enabled with software, but it's possible. Functionality that will allow the vehicle to power your house in the same way that Ford do. And the new Cybertruck does. One of the most exciting things about the Cybertruck reveal was, oh, Tesla getting into this, which was a thing that they always said they were never going to do, which is awesome. Rivian plans to offer a 240-volt inverter option for the existing R1S, R1T, like Ford's Pro Power on board. And that's very, very cool. The upcoming R2 model will have an integrated 240 volt AC output, which is great. Obviously, we're 240 volt over here. Only a 120 volt output was demonstrated on the prototype or the concept vehicles, and it's all part of their efforts to expand the utility of these vehicles through different power solutions. So I think we've probably wrapped up where we needed to be for all of the Rivian stuff, but we'll keep an eye on it and looking forward to talking more about the R2. Now let's get on with the news and have some look at some of the data coming in. First of all, we'll go to some country level data. This is Clean Technica. Have a looking at the French February numbers in Feb. Plug-in electric vehicles captured 26.3% of the passenger car market in France. That's up from 23.8% compared to February last year. The sales volume of fully electric vehicles up 32% year over year. Total automotive sales in February was 142,000 units. So it's a decent sized car market in France, one of the bigger car markets like Germany and the UK here in Europe. What was the best selling car? The Peugeot E208 leading the way in February. The homegrown Peugeot is the most popular fully electric car in the French market. Link to Clean Technica in the show notes. Some manufacturer data next, and long term listeners of this show know that I'm a huge fan of the Kia Hyundai Genesis cars that we get. Owned a Kona myself for a year and love that vehicle. I think what they're doing is fantastic, and other buyers seem to be agreeing, because Kia's total global sales was up again, and this was an increase on the same period last year, driven by, you beat me to the punchline, electric vehicle sales. This is actually January data, not February, because it takes a little while for some of the numbers to sometimes percolate through, but a 48% jump on January from the previous year. EVs accounting for almost 6% of Kia's total sales volume. The reported sales figures encompass things like the Kia EV6 and EV9, which you know, and the Niro EV. Plus, there's the EV5 for the countries that can get it, the Soul EV, and there's the Ray and the Bingo that are exclusive to Korea, South Korea, as well. So fantastic data coming out of Korea and Kia. Now let's talk about the UK's Car of the Year awards, and congratulations to the Kia EV9. The headline, they said, is EV9 is very fine, crowned UK Car of the Year 2024, and well deserved as well, because that Kia EV9 looks fantastic and getting rave reviews from those that have driven it and early owners as well. But there's actually better news to come out of the awards as well, although Kia will be very happy of their 2024 win. The UK Car of the Year awards, dominated by, you beat me to the punchline, electric vehicles, underscoring the growing market dominance of EVs here in the UK. So what else did well? Kia Hyundai Ioniq 6, family car category, Volvo ZX31 small crossover, Fisker Ocean named winner in the medium crossover category. All right, it's a good vehicle, not without its problems. And yes, is there any on the roads in the UK yet? In right-hand drive versions, and do we think Fisker will make it to the end of the year? Well, it's a bold one to give it a category win, but anyway. And Kia's EV9 took the top honours, as well as being the large crossover category winner. BMW i5 was awarded the category win of exclusive car. So the winner was an EV, and that was never in doubt, I don't think. And then when you break it down to the category level, it was EVs. This isn't the EV Awards, by the way, just in case you're thinking, yeah, what's the big deal? It's the UK Car of the Year Awards, with judging from all across the journalistic kind of platforms that are out there, sort of the video reviewers and the written press as well, and all the winners are EVs. But of course, nobody wants to buy an EV anymore if you read the mainstream press, and it's all doom and gloom. Bless them. No, things are going very well. And congratulations to all of the winners. Okay, now we'll talk about used EV prices. And in the US, so this is US data that we're looking at on today's podcast. The average transaction price for new vehicles is $47,401. That's a slight decrease on the end of last year. The average price of a new electric vehicle dropped by 10%, though, to $55,000. So still a significant increase over the average selling price of a vehicle by about $7,000, $8,000 or so. But the used EV market is where it really is. And this is what we're talking about today, with price declines of around 24% drop in used EV prices year over year as of February. Those have been led by the Tesla models experiencing the sharpest depreciation. Tesla, Audi and Jaguar models have seen the most significant price reductions over the past year. That's why the I-Pace is now incredible value. E-tron and e-tron Sportback, any of the Teslas, awesome value there. Now, since January, the most substantial price drops in the used EV market have been the Ioniq 5, EV6 and also the two Teslas, the Model 3 and the Model Y. Now, Tesla's website lists used Model Ys under $30,000. We know Hertz have had it's been a sting in the tail for Hertz, because the way that they did their business, this is not the problem, this is not Tesla's fault, and it's not any of our fault, but the way that Hertz worked out their residual values meant that there was a big write-down on their business, and that they've been really stung by getting that wrong. We had an EV-based subscription company over here that was buying their vehicles, not leasing them, but their model was, they buy them, they put them in the fleet for 2-3 years, whatever, they defleet them, they were called Onto, and they went, unfortunately, and into administration, because it just, the drop in EV prices wasn't factored in. But we couldn't live in these weird worlds where used EVs would go, you know, people were buying a Tesla, running it for a year, 12,000 miles, and selling it for more than they bought it for. And that's a good thing, because we need used EV prices to be very attractive for the people who buy second-hand, third-hand, cars. People like myself, I don't buy new cars. I'd like to get a deal, and I like to find value. Now, the Chevy Bolt, previously the third best-selling EV in the US, has seen its used price go down by 30% year over year, and overall, the average price decreases across EV brands from January to February was just 2.5%, so perhaps we've seen the worst of it in 2023, and we started off the year with much more sensible declines. Now, all I can compare that to is my experience here in the UK, because before Christmas, we were either going to buy a new Model 3 or a Polestar, and just the way things worked out, we got the Polestar 2. My wife much preferred that vehicle. She likes the Model Y, funnily enough, but she much preferred that. And in fairness, I found a stellar deal through my friend Evie Nick and his YouTube channel. He's a car dealer, but also he got me a great deal from the auction. So I was kind of deep into Polestar values for about 6 weeks or so. And I had a quick look earlier today, and they've gone down, but I think not a lot's changed here. So perhaps it's been a slow start to the year in terms of the first couple of months of depreciation. But these articles are presented as a negative way. EV values are falling off a cliff. Sure, if you're a business that's made some assumptions about EV values always being where they were, then that's an issue for these businesses. But for everyone else, for the rest of us, being able to get into more affordable electric vehicles, it's a huge win. And we'll carry on tracking that data. A lot of this coming, by the way, from Recurrent, and Recurrent Auto, a sponsor of this podcast, for full disclosure. Okay, let's talk about actually making new vehicles, and lots of news has come out recently. Mercedes have said, oh, we're not sure we can go as fast into EVs because they're still expensive to make. A new piece of research coming out from Gartner forecasting that within 3 years, EVs will become less expensive to make than internal combustion engine vehicles of a comparable size because of advancements in making them and also falling production costs. Innovations like centralized vehicle architecture and the kind of gigacasting techniques are all part of why that's happening. By 2027, Gartner say 15% of EV companies founded in the last decade will have either gone bankrupt or been acquired, and that makes a lot of sense because it's the way that kind of new industries grow sometimes, which is a lot in China, incentivized for lots of people to join the party and understand that it'll be survival of the fittest. We saw Proterra go, but they were bought by Volvo. We've seen Lordstown go, but was their offer the most compelling? Was their business run the best way? You can decide. We might see others go this year. The cost of repairing EVs still remains a bit of an issue, that is expected to increase, according to this Gartner research, which is an interesting point because we do see EVs written off when they're damaged more than other vehicles, which are more repairable or have a more robust supply chain in terms of used parts, etc. So that's, again, something to watch. But I'll pop a link to that research in the show notes if you'd like to read more yourself. And we'll finish off with a couple of bits of Tesla news. The Gigafactory outside of Berlin is scheduled to resume operations sometime this week. Now, this was an article I found over the weekend, and it refers to the production will start next week. So there's no date given, but the plant shut down on March 5th because of that eco-terrorism of the targeting of the high voltage lines that crisscrossed the country, which took out not just Tesla, but many parts of the region as well. Michaela Schmidt, head of the Works Council, announcing reopening to 12,500 employees will happen sometime this week, but no exact firm date on that. The outages prevented the production of approximately 6,000 vehicles so far. They make the Model Y in Germany, of course. The exact restart date is still pending. Not the work of a moment to spin up a car factory as well. So huge disruption happening there. The arson investigation, by the way, has now been escalated to Germany's federal prosecutor's office, which just highlights the seriousness, which we knew anyway, of the incident. And finally, let's talk Cybertruck Tent. Now, it is somewhat de rigueur these days to dunk on Tesla, isn't it? Now, I've been following Tesla for over 2,000 episodes of this podcast, so I've seen them in pretty much all shapes and sizes, and I've certainly noticed since Elon Musk went, more political and into his sort of Twitter days, there's been a change of sentiment. So it is either not only the dumb thing these days, but also easy to dunk on Tesla, which is unfair to them. But sometimes they don't make it easy on the rest of us who try and defend them sometimes, because they have now unveiled their Cybertruck Tent. And it's very different to how we were promised. Testers began delivering, actually, the Cybertruck base camp accessory. $3,000 this costs! It's a $3,000 tent. Now, the one that was promised at the reveal was... had some nice windows in it, and it was, you know, structural by the look of it, and was very, very cool, and would make your Cybertruck into something that would be very usable on, you know, camping trips and stuff like that. But, you know, $3,000 is a big old chunk of change to spend on a tent. If you're going to go to an outdoor store, you can get some serious camping gear for that. Now, when I first saw this picture of what they are shipping, which does look like a group of Boy Scouts have turned up for 5 minutes, slung some canvas over the back of it with a couple of tent poles and gone again. $3,000 for this? It's just awful. And now, installation requires a supercharge, a service center appointment. Because they've got to actually put the tent brackets into the Cybertruck's vault side rails. There's also some software that's meant to be coming called Tent Mode to enable the air suspension to do self-leveling, but that's not there yet in the vehicle as well, so that's absolutely absent, which raises concerns about when will it arrive, if it ever arrives, and the design of the Cybertruck and the tent doesn't allow for any integration with the truck's air conditioning system, limiting comfort options for the occupants. And look, it's fine, it's just not $3,000 fine, and yes, in this particular instance, they have made it rather easy to dunk on them somewhat, what we would call an own goal. Now, let me also bring up for our YouTube viewers and describe it for our podcast listeners, a picture of what Rivian does. This is the rooftop tent, which is both heated and cooled, and there's also access in terms of the vehicle providing heating and cooling off the traction battery, with lighting as well, and a heated air mattress for comfort and warmth, the hard shell cover, which also doubles up as a projector screen as well, enhancing the outdoor experience. This thing looks very, very cool, and it looks like it's going to be probably more expensive, I would say, than $3,000, because there's lots to it. It's not only very large, but also it looks very, very premium. This would be maybe $5,000 or $8,000, I would say. So Rivian fans also trying to score a few points on the internet with this. And to those, I would simply say the words camp kitchen. Yeah, where is that? So, you know, Rivian has promised stuff in the past and then told their customers, hey, you know that kitchen that you paid for? Yeah, that's not happening. We couldn't do it. So I think there is a new camp kitchen, a different version of the induction hob that's coming. I don't mean to be mean. I'm sure that all of these car companies are going through enormously difficult challenges, but there we go. Anyway. Ending with a smile, hopefully. Thank you to the hundreds of people that support on our Patreon page. It's how I get to do this as a living. I know. Thank you very much to everyone. You can do that as well. You'd be first with the podcast and ad-free. Be like them by clicking on a link in the show notes. Go to patreon.com/EVNewsDaily. A daily mention for our premium partners, Porsche of the Village in Cincinnati, Audi of Cincinnati East, Volvo Cars of Cincinnati East, National Car Charging on the US mainland, and Aloha Charge in Hawaii. Derek Riley from Nevo.ie and the Nevo EV Review Ireland YouTube channel. Octopus Electroverse, global public charging made simple with one app and one map, and Lease Plan Electric Moments, all the tools and guidance EV drivers need. Have a good and see tomorrow. And remember, there is no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.